taking their place in a long true line of everyday Americans,
helping to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. This is the Constitution Study on the America Out Loud Network with your host, Paul Engel.
Pay the bills, stay out of jail, love the neighbors and have a few good friends. Every day you are everyday Americans.
Hello there, everyday Americans, and welcome to the Constitution Study, where we read and study the Constitution. We teach the rising generation to be free. I'm glad you could join me today. You know, one of the things that we often, that the Americans often talk about is the right to vote. And as I've said on this program before, I believe the right to vote, well, it really requires that elections have three things: that they be free, that they be fair, and that they be transparent. So I want, and I will support legislation that does one of those three things, one or more of those three things, to make elections free, make elections fair, make elections transparent. Well, the Democrats in the House are attempting to resurrect what they're referring to as a voting rights bill, an attempt pretty much to subvert the Constitution and federalize pretty much of the election process as they can. Now, according to the legislation, this is, S-2747. This originated in the Senate. Congress has some findings. Now, the first thing is Congress finds it has broad authority to regulate the time, place, and manner of congressional elections under the Election Clause of the Constitution, Article 1, Section 4, Clause 1. And that is true. Article 1, Section 4, Clause 1 does say that, but says, however, that the time, place, and manner of holding elections for senators and representatives shall be prescribed in each state by the legislature thereof, but the Congress may at any time by law make or alter such regulations except as to the place of choosing the senators. So, yes, Congress has authority to make or alter regulations involving the elections of the times, places, and manner of electing senators and representatives, with the one exception being where senators are chosen. However, if you read it, this is supposed to be a state function, right? Congress may make or alter regulations, but this is meant to be a state power. One misconception is America has really only one truly federal election. That's when the presidential electors vote for president. Every other election is handled at the state level. The state constitutions establish the process. The state legislatures set the time, place, and manner. And the within the restrictions of the Constitution of the United States and of their state. And yes, Congress is authorized to change, to regulate time, place, and manner of holding the elections for Congress, but only for Congress. Now, Congress also finds that it had the authority and responsibility to fulfill the promise of Article 4, Section 4. They may ask, what is Article 4, Section 4? Article 4, Section 4 says that, the United States shall guarantee to every state in this union a Republican form of government. Now, what is a Republican form of government? It means the people elect representatives. The power rests in the people. It's inherent in the people. They elect representatives to exercise that power for them. That is a Republican form of government. Now, hold on to that for just a second, because Congress also finds that under the 14th Amendment, there is a right to vote. They say the Section 1 of the 14th Amendment protects the right to vote. Now, Section 1 of the 14th Amendment reads, all persons born or naturalized in the United States and subject to the jurisdiction thereof are citizens of the United States and of the state wherein they shall reside. No state shall make or enforce any law which shall abridge the privileges or immunities of citizens of the United States, nor shall any state deprive any person of life, liberty, or property without due process of law, nor deny to any person within its jurisdiction the equal protection of the laws. Now, why is all this? See, Congress has this, I should say, those promoting this legislation have this idea that legislation designed to make voting both fair and transparent is actually somehow an attempt to suppress legal voting. Yeah, they're actually making the point that requiring a photo ID, requiring a person prove they are who they say they are before they vote, is somehow racist. Says nothing about race, but they say, well, it will impact minorities more than it will whites. They provide no proof of this. In fact, if memory serves, there are several studies that show states that have instituted photo IDs actually have greater participation of minorities in voting than other states. So it doesn't hold up. But here's the interesting part. Remember, Congress only has the legal authority to deal with the time, place, and manners of elections for House and Senate of the United States. But just looking at the first section called the Voter Registration Modernization. According to this, Congress finds that the right to vote is a fundamental right of the citizens of the United States. Okay, I don't know if I'd call it a fundamental right, but it certainly is foundational to this country. I say not fundamental because it's not an unalienable right. It's not one you have for being a human being. It's one you have as a citizen of the United States. But it also, Congress also wants, it is a responsibility of the Senate, of the state and federal governments to ensure that every eligible citizen is registered to vote. No, it's not. Tell me one place in the Constitution where it says everybody must register to vote. See, if they say it's the responsibility to make sure that everybody's registered, well, then they have to make sure, they have to force you to register to vote. What if you don't believe in the election process? What if you don't wish to identify as a political party? There is no, you know, that is just plain false. They go on to say, existing voter registration systems can be inaccurate, costly, and inaccessible, and confusing. Voter registration systems must be updated with 21st century technologies. No, that's not a power delegated to the United States. But notice, they don't say anything about voting for House or Senate. They simply say, hey, we've got to put the federal government in charge of elections because... well, we have to force you to register the way we want and vote the way we want. So the purpose of this particular part of the act is to establish that it is responsibility of government to ensure that all eligible citizens are registered to vote in elections for federal office. Problem, all right, well, there's kind of an iffy one, right? Because the only actual federal offices you vote for are House and Senate. But again, this is called registering. They're going to force you to register whether you want to or not. That's what Congress wants to do. But that's just dealing with registration. Guess what? There's more to this. So yes, they want to make it easier for people to fraudulently vote by changing the way people, you know, you're automatically registered. They don't want to have proof of that you're actually the person voting. They want to have audits. They want to set rules for audits. There's a lot in here that they want to control. And they play games with it because they say federal elections for federal office. And that's kind of the little trick, right? If it only involves races for House and Senate, because remember, you don't vote for president, you vote for electors for president. So if only involves House and Senate, well, that's within their purview. But what about every other election that a state has? State legislature, governor, presidential electors, Are they going to set up an entirely separate system? Again, this is the federal government attempting to take over. And I believe, again, my opinion, to control the election process. Because I won't put thoughts in other people's heads. I'll give people the benefit of the doubt that they erroneously believe that these will make elections better, safer, more secure. They don't. But again, you have the federal government, rather than saying, you know what, we have a problem here, let's fix this. This is the federal government basically saying, states, we don't care what you want. We don't care what you think. You no longer are allowed. We are going to basically wipe out Article 1, Section 4 of the Constitution. We're going to wipe out that whole the time, places, and manner of holding elections for senators and representatives to be in the legislature. They're basically writing that out of the Constitution. They're saying only the federal government now can dictate the laws involving the election of senators and representatives. Right? That is a step to me, that's a step too far. They're basically writing out the Constitution. And what they're writing in is so dangerous to the concept of both a fair and transparent election that this is the political parties taking over even more the election process. They're already pretty much in control of the election process. Now it's the federal party, the party hacks in Washington that want control everywhere. Because, I'm not going to read into people's heads, but I think it's because they don't like the way some of the elections have happened. Forget the amount of fraud. Now, again, I'm not a party hack. But it is the Democrats that are pushing vote by mail, universal registration, referring to voter ID laws as Jim Crow 2.0. It's all Democrats, at least everyone that I've heard. Why do they want to do that? Could it be that so many of the election problems that existed in the 2020 election took place in Democratic strongholds? I don't know. But it becomes very dangerous when a party tries to take control of the election process. This is not unique. This has happened before. In fact, I wrote an article, gosh, 3 years now. 3 years ago, I wrote this article about something I'm sure most of you have never heard. How many have heard of the Battle of Athens, Tennessee? It's actually a very important story in my adopted home state. So let me tell you, let me tell you a bit about it from that article that I wrote back in January of 2019. You can find the text. I believe we've also got video of it on constitutionstudy.com. Just search for Battle of Athens. But Athens, Tennessee is the county seat of McMinn County, located between Chattanooga and Knoxville on the eastern side of Tennessee. Now, in the 1930s, the political machines pretty much ran the parties, right? More or less the way they do today. In 1936, Paul Cantrell was elected sheriff in what many in Athens believe to this day was a fraudulent election. Now, those who questioned the character of the man who became sheriff would find their fears vindicated. So at that time, the sheriff and his deputies were not paid a salary. Rather, they received fees for every person booked, incarcerated, and released. Now, all that was needed to collect their fee was a voucher signed by the sheriff. So, as you can imagine, this type of system led to a lot of arrests. Quoting from the Battle of Athens from American Heritage magazine, deputies routinely boarded buses passing through and dragged sleepy-eyed passenger to jail to pay $16.50 fine for drunkenness, whether they were guilty or not. Arrest ran as high as $115 per weekend. The fee system was profitable, but record-keeping was required and money could be traced. See, it was less troublesome to collect kickbacks for allowing roadhouses to operate openly. Cooperative owners would point out influential patrons. They were not bothered, but the rest were subject to shakedown. Prostitution, liquor, and gambling grew so prevalent that it became common knowledge in Tennessee that Athens was, quote-unquote, wide open. So in early 1941, a law was passed reducing the number of voting precincts in McMinn County from 23 to 12. and the number of justices of the peace from 14 to 7. Now, four of those remaining justices were openly supportive of Sheriff Cantrell. So you see thus a consolidation of his power. Now, Department of Justice investigations into election fraud in McMinn County in 1940, 42, and 44 were never resolved. You know, there was a citizens of the county went to the federal government going, we've got problems here, come help us. And nothing really happened. And in 1945 and 46, thousands of GIs were returning home from the war. And they didn't like what they saw. They were being stopped by law enforcement and fined, usually quite heavily, for just about anything. See, after years of serving their country and protecting liberty, they wanted to be left alone. But the more the veterans were arrested and beat up, the madder they got. They decided to use the liberties they had fought for and give people the opportunity to vote for a better class of candidate. So they met secretly and formed their own slate. While the veterans fielded five candidates, all eyes were on the race for sheriff between Knox Henry for the veterans and Paul Cantrell for the Democrats. Since 1936, Mr. Cantrell had gone on to serve as a state senator. But during his stint in Nashville, Pat Mansfield was elected sheriff. And now they were running to swap seats, with Mansfield running for the state senate and Cantrell running for sheriff. As the election approached, there were few signs of what was to come, and many in Athens expected something would happen. July 30th, two deputies were caught with what they described as an election whiskey. Cantrell had accused veterans of printing sample ballots in order to stuff ballot boxes, while the veterans blared their slogans from loudspeakers on moving cars. Your vote would be counted as cast. 2 days before the election, advertisements from the two parties appeared in a local paper, the Post-Athenian. The first was from the veterans. These young men fought and won a war for good government. They know what it takes and what it means to have a clean government, and they are energetic enough, honest enough, and intelligent enough to give us good, clean government. A few pages later, the Democratic Party said, look at the facts and you will vote for the Democratic ticket. The campaign fight is as old as the hills. It is a story of the outs wanting back in. The day before the election, VFW members from neighboring Blount County offered to help watch the polls. Meanwhile, Sheriff Mansfield, reacting to claims that certain elements planned to make a disturbance, hired hundreds of deputies from outside the county and even outside the state to protect the polls. The veterans' campaign manager, Jim Buttram, had sent telegrams to Tennessee Governor Jim Accord and U.S. Attorney General Tom Clark asking for assistance in ensuring a fair election. Neither man responded. The stage was set for an election none of us should ever forget. The trouble began on election day, August 1st, 1946, amidst the largest voter turnout in local history. At 9:30 a.m., Walter Ellis, a legally appointed representative for the veterans, was arrested for protesting voting irregularities. More than 200 veterans gathered at L.L. Schaefer's jewelry store, which served as the office of their campaign manager, Jim Buttram. They knew they were in trouble. Violence had already started, and Sheriff Mansfield had posted armed deputies around each of the polling places, presumably preparing for the 4 p.m. closing of the polls and the moving of the ballot boxes to the jail for counting. After a short meeting, it was agreed that those who did not have weapons should get them and return to their rally point, S&K's garage across the street from Mr. Buttram's campaign office. By 3 p.m., most of the veterans had assembled at S&K's garage, and most of them were armed and ready for things to get worse. Now, at about the same time, an elderly black farmer by the name of Tom Gillespie stepped into the 11th Precinct polling place to cast his ballot, where he was confronted by Windy Wise, a Cantrell guard. Wise told Gillespie, N-word, you can't vote here. Now, while Gillespie protested, Wise responded by hitting him with a set of brass knuckles. While Gillespie was running for the door, Wise shot him in the back. The shot drew a crowd, including Sheriff Mansfield, who ordered the polling place closed, left four deputies to guard it, and took Mr. Gillespie to jail. During the confusion, two poll watchers for the veterans, Ed Vestal and Charles Scott, were seized and held hostage inside the polling place by Wise and another deputy, Carl Neal. As the crowd outside taunted the deputies, Vestal and Scott were able to escape by going through a plate glass window and running for safety into the crowd. Deputy Wise stepped through the broken window waving his pistol, which led several unnamed veterans to decide to head back to the garage and, quote-unquote, get their guns. Now, while the ballot box was taken to a sheriff's cruiser, Deputy Wise informed Chief Deputy Dunn of the threat from the veterans. Chief Deputy Dunn ordered two deputies to the veterans' headquarters to arrest the men Wise could identify, and the ballot box was taken to the jail under armed guard. Well, the two deputies arrived at the veterans' headquarters. They were quickly disarmed and detained. Two deputies sent as reinforcement met with the same fate. Finally, a group of three deputies approached with pistols drawn, only to be beaten and detained as well. A crowd had formed outside the veterans' headquarters, demanding the lives of the prisoners. While some of the veterans agreed, some of them left, along with some in the crowd, who did not want to be part of it. Finally, the deputies were taken to the woods, beaten and shackled to trees. At the 12th Precinct, poll watchers for the veterans, Bob Harrell and Leslie Dooley, had observed numerous acts of fraud by Cantrell poll watcher Minus Wilburn. They had observed Wilburn allowing minors to vote and handing cash to adult voters. Finally, at 3:45 p.m., when Wilson attempted to allow a young woman without a poll tax receipt to vote, Harrell interceded, grabbing Wilburn's wrist before he could deposit the ballot into the box, and received a slap on the hand with a blackjack and a kick in the face in response. Wilburn then ordered the precinct closed and the ballot box taken to the jail under armed guard. Shortly after the polls closed at 4 p.m., it looked like another election had been stolen, and there was nothing anyone could do about it. However, earlier in the afternoon, Bill White, a veteran of the war in the Pacific, was getting angrier and angrier. He told the veterans, quote, "You call yourselves GIs, you go over there and fight for 3 and 4 years, you come back and you let a bunch of draft dodgers who stayed here where it was safe and you are making it safe for them push you around. If you don't stop this, and now is the time and the place, you people wouldn't make a pimple on a fighting GI's blank. Get guns." After that, several veterans broke into the National Guard Armory, grabbed arms and ammunition, and distributed them among the veterans. By 9 p.m., Cantrell, Mansfield, and State Rep. George Woods were locked inside the jail, guarded by 50 deputies and counting ballots. Mansfield and Woods were both on the County Election Commission and represented a majority so they could certify the election results themselves. While opinions differ on the details, the veterans surrounded the jail and demanded that those inside come out with the ballots, or they would come in after them. Now, a significant firefight broke out with automatic weapons and shotgun fire, and at least two deputies were injured. Since those in the jail were safe behind brick walls, the firefight went on for hours. Now, with rumors of reinforcements coming to support Cantrell, the veterans grew more and more concerned. They had broken state, local, and federal laws, and if they could not gain access to the jail to prove the fraud before help arrived, they were looking at spending the rest of their lives in jail. Now, the veterans tried Molotov cocktails, but they were ineffective as they could not get close enough to the jail. Finally, at 2:30 a.m., veterans showed up with dynamite. Now, about that time, an ambulance showed up, and the veterans let it through, assuming it was there to evacuate the wounded. Instead, Cantrell and Mansfield jumped in, and the ambulance sped out of town. At 2:48 a.m., the veterans threw dynamite at the jail, and by 3:30 a.m., the deputies still inside the jail surrendered. Bill White reported finding tally sheet scored 15-1 for Paul Cantrell. In an ironic twist, the veterans who had been battling the deputies now had to guard them from the townsfolk and the deputies they had been terrorizing for years. One deputy had his throat slashed, one was shot, and another one beaten, but there were no fatalities. After the election, with a power vacuum in the county, armed GIs patrolled the streets. There were rumors that Mansfield was planning an invasion to reclaim Athens, but it was an invasion which never happened. On August 4th, Pat Mansfield telegraphed the governor his resignation and requested Knox Henry fill his remaining term. The next day, State Rep. George Woods returned to Athens to certify the election, and Knox Henry was elected sheriff by a vote of 2,175 to 1,270. On August 11th, the five veterans elected to office announced they would return to the county all fees collected in excess of $5,000. In the aftermath, only one man had charges filed against him when Windy Wise was sentenced for 1 to 3 years for shooting Tom Gillespie in the back. While the national press often misreported the events in 1946, some going as far as to claim the sheriff was killed, after the night of violence and subsequent shakeup in county politics, things in Athens quickly returned to normal. While the act of taking up arms, regardless of how corrupt the politics, was routinely chastised compared to vigilanteism or a revolution that could tear apart the nation if replicated elsewhere, the calm after the storm showed the error of such predictions. Knox Henry served 2 terms as sheriff, while Paul Cantrell eventually returned to McMinn County, running a bank with his brothers. Pat Mansfield secretly resigned his position on the election committee on August 8, 1946. He also had what was described as a cordial meeting with one of the advisors to the veterans. Now, what should we learn from these events? Well, first of all, political corruption and election tampering is nothing new. It's been going on since, well, there have been politics and elections. But like an infection or a disease, letting it fester corrupts not only those in politics, but everything around it. So I don't know which is sadder, that men who fought for our freedom overseas also had to fight in American streets for those same freedoms, or that Americans let the situation get so bad in the first place. I've talked to many people who see the corruption and do nothing because they don't see things getting any better. But too often, they forget that not seeing things get better is not an excuse for letting things get worse. Was Jim Buttram the only person who reached out to state and federal officials to help ensure a fair election? What happened with the DOJ investigations in 40, 42, and 44? I guess Edmund Burke was right. The only thing necessary for evil to triumph is for good men to do nothing. Second, we see the real reason we have a Second Amendment. It's not about hunting or even necessarily personal defense. It's about giving the people a way to ensure their own freedom from an oppressive government. Sometimes an armed populace is the only defense against a corrupt government, whether that government be from their own country, from Washington, D.C., or overseas. Lastly, it shows what I've been talking about since I started the Constitution so many years ago. When faced with an ever more corrupt and lawless government, we have only 2 choices. Submit or fight. The GIs in Athens wanted to fight at the ballot box, but since the situation had gone too far, their only choice was to fight with arms or surrender to the corruption. America is fast approaching the situation where elections matter little, if at all. It seems we no longer vote based on someone's willingness to uphold the Constitution, but only their promise to give us stuff. It seems the rule of law means less and less every day, and the vast majority of Americans either do not know or do not care. As Santayana has said, those who do not know history are doomed to repeat it. Are we dooming ourselves to repeat the Battle of Athens? Are we willing to doom our children and our grandchildren into making the same choice the veterans did in 1946? Have we even bothered to teach them what the men and women in World War II were fighting for? Are we condemning them to be treated the way the veterans were treated in Athens, Tennessee, in 1945 and 1946? Now, I have to jump out and take a break, but please head over to constitutionstudy.com. It's where you find everything I'm working on. And if you want to, please support the work of the Constitution Study. You know, we put on a lot of articles, videos. This program takes time, it takes money. If you can support it, that would be wonderful as well. Also, check out healthycell.com. You know, I don't know about you, but taking vitamins is not fun. You got a fist full of pills and, you know, you're wondering what you're doing. Well, Healthy Cell has reinvented the vitamin. They've made it work better at the cellular level. You can take them in pill-free gel form. Now, they have lots of different formulas, but you know, maybe what you need is a little bit of focus. Maybe after listening to me talk about the Battle of Athens, you know, were your eyes glazing over or were you just, you know, what do we do? Well, you can try Focus and Recall. It works good at getting your mind to focus again on the tasks at hand to help your short-term focus as well as your long-term memory. And as an America Out Loud listener, you get 20% off your first order, whether it's Focus and Recall or any of their products. So please, go to healthycell.com/outloud, place your order. That first order, you'll get 20% off. But make sure you go to that website healthycell.com/outloud to get your 20% discount on the first order.
Each of us is born with 30 trillion cells that make us. These cells determine how we feel, perform, sleep, focus, and how long we live. And to live our best life, all we have to do is feed our cells. But most food and supplements don't reach our cells, keeping us from reaching our full potential. Make every cell count with Healthy Cell. Founded with a mission to empower people to take control of their own health at the most fundamental level, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, world-renowned cell researcher and medical doctor, created supplements that work at the cellular level to boost immune health, sleep better, focus deeper, and stay younger longer. Go to HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off your first order of any product. And that's HealthyCell.com, HealthyCell, and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
The American Constitution is the most magnificent document on earth. We are America Out Loud. Join us as we celebrate the genius of our founding fathers. So you can listen in on our free apps on Apple, Android, or Alexa. America Out Loud Talk Radio. Liberty and justice for all.
Welcome back, everyday Americans. You've rejoined the Constitution Study. Today we're talking elections. Specifically, the attempt in Congress to federalize so much of the election process. And why is that a problem? Besides the fact that the Constitution clearly places a primary responsibility for setting the time, place, and manner of electing representatives and senators in the hands of the state legislature, Congress is taking the ability in the Constitution to modify or update those regulations to simply take over the election process. And by extension, since most states will not set up separate election processes for House and Senate and for everything else, effectively take over the election process. Now, okay, Paul, you may say, you know, what's the big deal? So we now have, you know, nationally controlled elections instead of having 50 different methods of doing this. Well, part of the problem is the more you centralize control, well, the easier it is to manipulate, to cheat, to commit election fraud. For example, how many of you have heard that Mark Zuckerberg gave millions of dollars to different election programs in the 2020 election? Now, I've heard most of my adult life that we have to get money out of politics, that money corrupts politics. Well, Mark Zuckerberg has found an interesting way of actually introducing money into politics. See, he didn't give money to, well, he gave money to candidates, but he also gave nearly $500 million, that's B, billion with a B, to an organization called the Center for Tech Life, CTCL. And that group was basically used to influence the 2020 election. For example, the National Voter at Home Institute created a guide to help public officials sway public opinion in favor of mail-in voting. They put together a whole toolkit, the 2020 Election Official Communication Toolkit. Public records show they shared those documents with officials in the state of Wisconsin. Now, why would they want to push for a mail-in voting? Well, I suppose at the one point you say, well, it's easier for lazy people to vote, right? You don't have to worry about being there at a certain time. You don't have to worry about transportation. But it also is extremely open to fraud. So I've said this before. When I vote, from the time the ballot is issued to the time the ballot is cast, it is never outside of my control. I show up, I show a photo ID, I have no problem with that. They hand me a ballot card, I go to a voting station, I cast my vote, I then hand that card over to an election official, voila. Now, the way it works here in Tennessee is not perfect, but notice the ballot's in my control. Well, if you use mail-in voting, guess what? First of all, you have the ballot is out of your control. It gets sent from the election offices to you. It's out of your control. Are you sure you got it? Are you sure it wasn't rerouted or tampered with? We don't know. But let's assume we can trust the post office. The post office never loses anything, never misdirects anything, never delays anything. We'll take that off the table. Now you have a ballot. It's in your hand. You cast it. You fill it out. You send it back. Again, it's now out of your control. And somebody, frequently without outside observation in some states, opens it and then counts it. Now, guess what? If men were angels, we'd need no government, but men aren't angels. People cheat. People commit fraud. And because that ballot spends so much time outside of your control, it is open to fraud. Add to that the push to have everybody mailed a ballot. And we see the problems you had in California and other states where households were getting ballots for people who hadn't lived there for decades. 3 and 4 and 5 ballots for people who hadn't lived there for years. That's just a recipe for fraud. So here you have a billionaire. And listen, he wants to spend his money, however, be my guest. But he used it to influence the 2020 elections. And there isn't that much call. There isn't that much. No one in at least not that I'm aware of, Congress isn't worried about the money that Zuckerberg spent. In fact, they're promoting the same mail-in balloting that CTCL has used to promote mail-in balloting and to craft a narrative to get public support for it. That's not going to stop with the new law. But we also found that of the nearly $500 million that Zuckerberg's organization gave to this organization, approximately $350 million went primarily to far-left activists. At least that's the reporting coming out of the Federalist, where they say that money went to Democrat-run districts, functioning in large part as get-out-the-vote effort. That's right. They didn't go to nonpartisan organizations. They went to Democratic-run districts to get out the vote. So yes, he manipulated the vote indirectly, but he manipulated the vote. He bought the opportunity for a specific political party to have a greater get-out-the-vote campaign. Is this really that much different than what was going on in Athens, Tennessee? From the manipulation, you know, the laws passed to limit the opposition. Remember, they decreased the number of districts. They decreased the number of justices of the peace, which gave those who were in favor of Sheriff Cantrell even more influence on the process. Is that really much different than what's going on here? Passing a law to allow greater influence, not only the political parties, but specific political parties. And again, that's not written in the law, but that does seem to become the outcome. And then having a big buck spend millions of dollars to influence the election. You know, from the example of sheriff's deputies that are supposedly guarding the ballot box, handing cash to certain voters. Is this really that different? But this laughingly titled voting rights bill, which is really about federalizing the elections, the election process, isn't the only example. For example, again, the Federalist has been doing some research, and they did an analysis. We've all heard of the January 6th committee, this illegal committee. Right? Congress does not have any investigatory powers except in what is necessary for writing of law. for crafting legislation. The January 6th committee is attempting to be a criminal investigation, something they're not allowed to do. And I've talked about that before. But it's all there's a reason why Congress is not allowed to investigate crimes. It's an executive branch detail. But what do we see? It's become a partisan hatchet job. According to the analysis done by the Federalist, 84 subpoenas have been publicly issued by the Select Committee. Of those 84, only 8 have targeted individuals or groups with any connection to the events at the Capitol on January 6th. That means 90% of these subpoenas are political attacks. They've taken aim at former government officials, private citizens. This is a smear campaign. Now, that's just the 84 that have been publicly issued. There have been more than 100 subpoenas seeking telephone records of individuals that are still sealed. So neither the public or others are allowed to see who's being investigated. This is Banana Republic work, folks. This is, you know, for a Congress that, on the one hand, claims the right to make sure to protect that we have a Republican form of government. They're doing a lot here to destroy the Republican form of government. If you point out issues, problems with an election where a Democrat won, when Democrats are in control, they come after you. Now, compare this to the 2016 elections. You know, interestingly enough, there were plenty of people that questioned the legitimacy of the election of President Trump. They did so publicly. They did so on the record, on telephone, on mic, on TV, or on video. And not once did the Republicans form a committee to go after them. Now, again, I'm no fan of the Republican Party either. But when I see a political party using the levers of power to attack its political rivals, this is the same criminal mischief that was used in Athens, Tennessee in the 1940s. You want more evidence of just how corrupt this January 6th committee is? They have issued subpoenas for 14 people in 7 states who acted as alternate electors, meaning they cast ballots for whom they thought had won their state. At least if it hadn't been manipulated by fraud and political and judicial abuse. You see, electors in Arizona, Georgia, Michigan, New Mexico, Nevada, Pennsylvania, and Wisconsin were challenging the election. They were challenging the manipulation of the method of choosing electors in several of those states, as well as other irregularities in those states. So these alternate electors cast their votes as alternate votes in an attempt to preserve the legitimacy should these elections be found legally invalid. But what does that have to do with January 6th? What does that have to do with the supposed riot on January 6th? The supposed insurrection? Absolutely nothing. Nothing. Other than, okay, there, you know, these were several people who disagreed, who saw problems in the election. These people didn't riot. Do they have any evidence that these people rioted? No. This is a political hatchet. It's a smear job. Now, why would people go so far as to smear people who said, listen, they didn't follow the rules of my state, so I'm casting a protest vote? Well, it's real simple. See, if you can put true punishment in challenging the official narrative, you can intimidate your opponents into submitting. Again, is this really that different from what went on in McMinn County, Tennessee, in the 1940s? From people who, poll watchers who identified voting irregularities being arrested, being held, being charged for doing their job? How do you have a Republican form of government when no one's allowed to challenge whether or not the election was legitimate or not? And why is it only the Democrats are only going after the Republicans when they challenge a Democratic win? But no one said boo when the Democrats spent 4 years claiming that Donald Trump didn't win the election. See, this is why I hate political parties. This, ladies and gentlemen, is a perfect example of what President Washington was speaking of at his farewell address. He said, "The alternate domination of one faction over another, sharpened by the spirit of revenge natural to party dissension, which in ages and countries has perpetuated the most horrid enormities, is itself a frightful despotism." That is what we're seeing. We are seeing the spirit of revenge between these two parties, literally to the point of we have to destroy the other. We have to use any means possible to destroy the other. But Washington was right. This is its own despotism. If you cannot question the process, if you cannot propose evidence that laws were broken, then you are living in a despotic realm. And it's not just this illegal, corrupt January 6th committee. Attorneys general in at least Michigan and New Mexico have been investigating presidential electors that submitted what they refer to as falsely declaring that President Trump had won their state's election. Now, the officials say that he lost. These people submitted their votes. Again, very similar. Michigan, New Mexico, two of the states that the January 6th is investigating. But you see, the attorneys, they didn't just look at their own saying, "Hey, did you violate our state law?" No, no, no. They've referred the investigation to the Department of Justice. So now I have federal investigations into whether or not these people committed a federal crime by submitting what they believed were the legitimate votes, the legitimate will of the people of their state. See, if we criminalize dissent, then there is no freedom. What we're doing here is much more dangerous than I believe many people realize. To criminalize dissent is to criminalize speech, it's to criminalize thought. Now, Benjamin Franklin, writing as Silas Duguid, said, "Without freedom of thought, there can be no such thing as wisdom. And no such thing as public liberty without freedom of speech, which is the right of every man as far as by it he does not hurt or control the right of another. And this is the only check it ought to suffer and the only bounds it ought to know." We're criminalizing speech. We're criminalizing thought. We are criminalizing dissent. But Paul, we're not doing it. You're allowing your employees to. These people work for us. These people work for us. They are our employees. They are our representatives at the state and the federal level. That means we are allowing this. We are criminalizing dissent. Now, when this happens, only one of two things are the logical, rational outcome. One is that when the alternate faction, as Washington told us, right, when the alternate domination of one faction over another, when the alternate faction comes to power, they use the exact same tools on their opponents. How many of you have heard about, Republicans should do the same thing to Democrats that the Democrats did to them when they were in power? How many of you have heard this? We've heard it when it comes to the filibuster. We've heard it when it comes to judicial nominations. What is good for the goose is good for the gander. That is the alternate domination of one faction over another. That is a frightful despotism. Because your rights mean nothing when rules and laws mean nothing. That means when your group is in power, you rejoice, and when the opponents are in power, you are enslaved. We need to get our minds out of this team sport mentality. The political parties are not there to help you. They are not there to advance your agenda. They are not there to support you. They are there to advance themselves, to maintain power. Some will go to any lengths possible. There are some in both parties that will go to any lengths possible to maintain their power. They will sell you down the river. They will make any compromise they want. They want to be in control. And your rights are easy fodder for them. They'll just throw them out. But when you end up with this alternate, this revenge, we must punish those who disagree with us. We must punish those who oppose us. That is despotism. Laws don't matter. Rules don't matter. The ends justify the means. We must destroy our opponents. Ladies and gentlemen, the Republic would be dead. And as I look at America today, the Republic is dying. The vaunted Republican form of government that those supporting the election bill claim to be supporting is actually dying. And is dying from the spirit of revenge. That we must win at all costs, that we must punish our opponents, that the ends justify the means. But I said there were two possible outcomes. And we've seen the second possible outcome show up time and time and time again through history. So you will either be ruled by revenge or by subjugation. We'll either be ruled by those who will fight or those who will submit. And once you allow one side power, they'll exercise it. History is replete with what happens when you submit to bullies and tyrants. But there's one thing I want you to consider. Cast your mind back to the story of the Battle of Athens. So you had GIs that came back from fighting a war, protecting their rights, only to have their rights being destroyed. And what did they do? They tried to go to the ballot box. They did what most people would say is the right thing. They said, if we've got corrupt people in office, well, then we'll just run better people. But you see, the corruption had gotten so far that didn't work. See, this has been going on, what did I say, from the 30s. This has been going on more than a decade by the time the GIs show up. And for more than a decade, you had people going, I know, the election was stolen, but what are you going to do? They didn't deal with the problem when it was small. Oh, yeah, some people actually went and tried to get help, right? They went to the Attorney General. They went to the Attorney General of the United States. They kept looking for someone else to save them. They never dealt with it themselves. And because they didn't deal with the problem themselves, they didn't deal with it with small, they let it grow. Since they didn't deal with it themselves, they were subject to the whims of others who said it just wasn't important enough for us to deal with it. Which means when the GIs came back, they had a very simple, if painful, choice to make. Do we submit to the tyranny? Do we submit to the lawless actions of some? Do we submit to the corruption and the crushing of dissent? Or do we stand with the only thing we have left? What is that only thing? Violence. There was no law, they were no longer able to defend their rights at the ballot box. Their only choice left was to do so on the battlefield. What are our children and our grandchildren going to say when they realize that we, the people, did not defend their rights when we could do so at the ballot box? When we could hire people that put their oath above their party loyalty, that put the Constitution above everything else. When our children get to the point where they have to decide whether they submit to the tyranny or go get guns, I believe our history, our children, will curse us because we let it go so far that the only answer was to pick up arms. That we left to them that terrible choice because we were unwilling to make the choice when it was simple and less painful. Now be sure to make AmericaOutLoud.com your daily stop for all the latest news and happenings. It is more important than ever that you share these stories, the articles, the podcasts, the videos, that we help secure the blessings of liberty for America, for our children, and for our future.
Pay the bills, stay out of jail, love the neighbors, and have a few good friends.